Hey there, I'm Kendra Adachi, and my show, The Lazy Genius Podcast, helps you be a genius about the things that matter and lazy about the things that don't, and you get to decide what matters. I'm not here to tell you what to do. I'm here to give you a new way to see. Episodes of The Lazy Genius Podcast are full of compassionate time management tips and permission slips to do what makes sense for you. New episodes drop every Monday. Follow and listen to The Lazy Genius Podcast on the free Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.
Matt's been, he has, I think a breath of fresh air is a great way to put it. He's just got a very positive kind of outlook on everything. And really in his career, he's been through a lot. I mean, he's been injured a bunch. And I think, you know, our hope was when, like, he is ready to be healthy. And this is the time he's going to be healthy. And I think that's got him in a really good place and really happy to be here and really kind of content and with where he's kind of at in his career. But he's off to a great start. You know, we're lucky to have him. He's pitching at a really high level right now.
You know, Matthew Boyd, who Craig Counsell was talking about right there, was in a dark place when he was hurt and rehabbing on his own. And he's probably wondering, was it for this, my life, I sought? Maybe so, and maybe not. Maybe so, and maybe not. But he fought his way back, Lawrence. He fought his way all the way back. He got healthy on his own. The Cubs took a flyer on him and signed him. And it has worked out better than any of them could have dreamed.
By the way, Craig Counsell will be on the show tomorrow. I'm looking forward to talking with him about his All-Stars, and Matthew Boyd is one of them. We had an incredible interview with Matthew Boyd, and I think it's partially because he's a really good dude, and partially because Spiegs did the legwork on this. Like, he built a relationship up with Matthew Boyd and knew his story, so he was able to kind of shepherd the rest of us through the conversation with him. I'm so happy for this guy, and I'm glad that he got a chance to talk with us. So for those of you who didn't hear it, just play you a couple snippets of it. Check this out. This is why he chose the Cubs.
You don't often get to choose. I mean, a lot of the times, even when it is your chance to get to choose, your options are limited, right? But as you get to play, you know, Major League Baseball, and you travel around, and, you know, you see environments like Wrigley Field, and you hear about players who play in organizations, and you play, like, you hear about guys that play like in for the Cubs, and you hear about how highly they speak of it. And, you know, for me, there was always a personal connection to the Cubs. I just loved, my grandfather was a diehard Cubs fan, and he, was just, I don't think I fully understand the depth of his love for the Cubs. But I started to, as I got older and older. And because of his love for the Cubs, I had a love for the, you know, a small love for the Cubs is kind of like, you know, my second team. And when they called in free agency, I was so excited. And it was one of those things where it was like, I knew where I wanted to be, and I'm really thankful.
It's just such a genuine and kind and peaceful dude who felt the Cubs calling as a really, you know, like a bit of kismet with his grandfather.
You described it, and we were talking off the air after the interview, you talked about gratitude with him, and you can feel it. And I think the part that all the Cubs stuff and his connection to the Cubs stuff, I think is super cool. This is the part that got me. And it's him talking about having Tommy John surgery and what that road back was like for him.
Last year, I didn't get a job at the beginning of the year. I was rehabbing Tommy John surgery. You know, I had a surgery before that for my flexor that, you know, we thought was going to fix the problem. And I just never really felt right after that to kind of sum things up quickly, you know? And, so I came off a bad year, and then, you know, it wasn't healthy. And then, you know, it was clear I needed Tommy John, and then, you know, wasn't able to get a big league deal. So, you know, last offseason, I had the perspective of watching from home. And it was one of those things where it's like, you never know if you're going to get an opportunity. Now, my belief in what I know I could do never wavered. You know, I was like, if I get the chance to have a ball in my hand, I know exactly what I'm going to do. And I'm going to prepare like crazy. But I had to try out, essentially. And you never know if you're going to get that deal. So, I'm grateful. I believe my best baseball is ahead of me. I believe that, you know, I have more than a couple of years left. I want to play, you know, much longer than that. I'd love to play into my 40s. I don't know if I'm going to be granted that opportunity, but I do have a ton of gratitude for where I am today, knowing that it all can be gone very fast. And to get to wear a baseball uniform, not to mention that Cubby blue with the pinstripes, man, it's something that, you know, I only could dream about as a kid. So, you know, that's kind of what plays into that.
Glad you wanted to relive this a bit, Lawrence, and just sit in that headspace. It's such wonderful headspace. Good for him. You know, he's old enough at 34 right now to realize how fleeting this stuff can be. These are the most starts he has made, 18 this year, since 2019. So since he was 28 years old, since then, it's been a battle and a slog to not be able to make his way through a full season. So we hope his rebuilt arm can carry it forward this year.
Yeah, and there's a couple more things here that we want you guys to share. Like, this is, like, we talked a little bit today about, like, baseball romanticism, and we're both privy to that. We both are susceptible to baseball romanticism. But how can you not root for a guy like this?
Yeah. I have a little more romanticism. I mean, that's why I'm the police.
You're definitely the police today.
Usually
you're not. Usually you're just waving people through.
Yeah, I'm putting up barricades all over the place.
Yeah, today it's like you're putting those strips down where people roll by and their tires get blown out.
Wear your seatbelts. I'm going to pull you over and see if you got a seatbelt on. Go ahead.
It's true. This is what Matthew Boyd feels about having his family at Wrigley watching him pitch.
I'm grateful. You know, it was really special. I mean, the day before opening day, I was walking around the field with my dad. I showed him the clubhouse, and we got to walk on the field and, you know, walk around. He got to go touch the bricks and, you know, see the ivy up and close. And you could see the emotion kind of overwhelming. That was overwhelming to him. And you know, his first words he said, he goes, "Wow, what I would give to switch spots with my dad right now so he could witness this." And and I say that I don't think I understood the gravity of it. Like I don't think I fully will, but you know, my dad does. And to see, I think anyone who knows, you have that love of family, and you know those people that you love, and you see what something means to them. I mean, playing for the Cubs would always be something that was a dream of mine, but to see it, to do it, and then have my dad have the emotions, and knowing that he has the emotions for his father, it's just something I'm like, I've got chills kind of saying it. It's just really special. And again, I have a ton of gratitude to just wear this uniform.
How can you not be romantic about baseball?
This is what I'm saying, man. His dad wanted to switch places with his late grandfather. It's beautiful. And this is why you can't turn the seventh inning stretch into a TikTok video. That's why you can't do it.
When you see Matthew Boyd be announced, know that that's what's getting announced.
Oh, that's a good call, man, because the All-Star Game, it gives you those kind of special moments.
It'll be odd for people because they're like, wait, who's Matthew Boyd? But we wanted you to know who Matthew Boyd is, what he's representing, as he's representing you as a Cub fan next Tuesday. That's the representation that we're talking about.
Yeah, it's beautiful. That's beautiful. And so many of those dudes will have a story. Like,
yeah.
I think
about Marte. Ketel Marte's story this year.
Sure.
And what that is. There's a lot of stories, but I'm glad that we could spotlight this one.
Hey there, I'm Kendra Adachi, and my show, The Lazy Genius Podcast, helps you be a genius about the things that matter and lazy about the things that don't, and you get to decide what matters. I'm not here to tell you what to do. I'm here to give you a new way to see. Episodes of The Lazy Genius Podcast are full of compassionate time management tips and permission slips to do what makes sense for you. New episodes drop every Monday. Follow and listen to The Lazy Genius Podcast on the free Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.
I cede the floor to my partner because he's brought up something, and we were going to do it yesterday, but we didn't have time. There's something that you would like to get off your chest, and you might find some community in other people who feel similarly.
Yeah, and I'm a little sheepish about even talking about it because I like the player so much. and I love what he's becoming before our eyes. Pete Crow Armstrong, it's like a superstar birthing before our eyes, like in one of those star nurseries that a NASA telescope will see, where you're like, oh my God, look at this galactic happening. We're seeing that happen, and it's been wonderful. His skill set, his passion for the game, his swagger, his relationship with the fans. He's so well-spoken. He's so thoughtful.
I'm so glad you're saying that about a white athlete.
He's really articulate, Lawrence. You like that?
It's pretty good.
All right, good.
Speaks so well. He really speaks well.
But seriously, he's a young player. Not all young players are there in communication. And he's heartfelt. You can tell he's kind. And like, he spoke to the ushers the other day. Paul Sullivan wrote about it. And I talked to the head usher the other day because I just happened to run into him. And he was saying that Pete was wonderful with all of the ushers and the staff at Wrigley. Really connective and honest and great. So like, I think the world of the kid and the world of him as a player right now. It's been amazing. But he does it all the time. And when he did it the other day, it really didn't sit well with me again, and it didn't sit well with the casual baseball fan next to me, who was my sister. And we talked about it, and I realized that I need to come in here and admit that this bothers me.
Horner at third, Happ at second, Suzuki at first. Pete Crow Armstrong at the plate, Matt's on the mound, the pitch. Swing and a miss, he struck him out. Pete Crow Armstrong slams the bat down, slams the helmet down, leaves the bases loaded.
Wow, I didn't realize that John Rooney called it like that, but I'm not surprised. He slammed the bat down, he slammed his helmet down, he ripped the guard off of his arm and threw that down. He picked up the helmet and threw it down again so he could get another throw. Then he kicked the arm guard that he had already thrown down. Everything ends up in a pile there by the baseline. And I'm
at least it's in a pile.
Okay. And then I'm like, well, maybe he'll pick it up and take it in the dugout. But he didn't, because he was due to go play. He made the last out of the inning. So I got to look and see if he picks it up himself when he doesn't make the last out. Because leaving it for a clubby to go do is the other level of this that I hope is not a regular thing. And I can't speak to that. In this moment he did. But again, he's going out to play the outfield. But I have to admit, just from my perspective as like a watcher of sports, as a watcher of people, I really don't like it. I think it's unseemly. I think it's like, it's not very adult, and it's kind of, it bothers me. It doesn't feel like great sportsmanship. Although it's not directly offensive to the opposition, I just don't think it's really setting a good example and a respect for the game. And I just got to admit that it doesn't sit well with me. Hope I articulated that well enough. And I'm not necessarily ripping the guy, because I don't want to rip the guy. He's a young player, but I don't like the actions.
I think your ire should be directed at the Cubs. Wait a minute. That's from earlier in the show. What are my thoughts on this one? So this one isn't that big a deal to me, because development isn't always linear, and we are still talking about a young player. He runs a little hot, and he's friendly, and he's polite for the most part, and he gets frustrated with himself. So I understand it. I'm with you on don't leave it for the clubby.
Yeah.
I don't like that. I truly don't like that. But I do think that there are moments when you have to express yourself, and or else you're going to fall apart. And I struggle with that in a lot of different forums. So I can understand it to a degree. And even in baseball, like even in softball, you know, if I don't hit a ball as well as I thought I could, I would get upset. Now, I wouldn't slam anything down, but you could see me, you know, running to first with my head down yelling, you know, because you didn't do as well as you hoped. And that's because I was 49. You know, the guy that I was at 21, 22 on a baseball diamond. And look, I was a captain, so there was some of that. I was a catcher, so you can't really go off when you need to go off, but occasionally you need to let that steam out. I've always been someone, and Dan and I used to talk about this all the time, I always felt like Pete has a little too much dip on his chip. But
is this go hand in hand with the dip on the chip?
Yeah, but I've come around on it now. Like, I'm with him, and I'm okay. It's the same way that I'm, for the most part, okay with some of the crazy stuff that Wilson Contreras does, because I get it that some guys run hot.
Well,
now, it's a different thing. It's a different thing.
Uh-huh.
Because Wilson often misdiagnoses what is going on and gets stuff wrong.
Right, right, right. That adds a whole nother level. But I hear what you're saying. And let me say, like, I understand that we are who we are as people, and especially as young players and young people, the same stuff that makes you great can make things a problem. And in fact, I was texting with someone who knows Pete really well, and they said that he wears his emotions close to the surface.
Yes.
And that can be a great thing about him, too.
That's why I was worried about that play in center field a couple weeks ago.
Absolutely.
Because he's an emotional player. But similarly to Javi Baez, he needs some of that to kind of flow through him. Like, I know I'm getting kind of existential
here. No. I'm with it. They're very similar. There's a connective tissue that's far bigger than the trade. It's the way that they feed off the crowd and the way that they flourish and the way that they bloom, in that way. Did Javi do that? I don't remember Javi expressing himself in that way necessarily.
Javi's a little cooler than PCA, you know?
Yeah.
Like usually,
Pete's a little more raw and a little more open about all that stuff.
Like, on the spectrum of Javi to Wilson, PCA is probably closer to Javi,
yeah,
but he's on that spectrum.
Yeah. Look, before we talk about the reaction to this that's coming in, Alex, you had a similar experience with the fan that you were with.
Yeah.
The other day.
What did you say that it was your sister?
Yes.
Right. What did she say after it?
She said, "I don't like that."
Yeah. I was with my girlfriend and her cousin. And her cousin Jess said exactly the same. She's like, why is he so angry? So yeah, it was like the similar reaction to it. But
yeah,
I had to explain that, you know, he's a young guy that sometimes when he makes a last out, does that.
Yeah. You know, it's interesting because a lot of the reactions are like, I love it personally. I love the intensity. I don't mind it. There's some other people, but there's a lot of people saying, stay off my lawn from Spiegs. Spiegs is shaking his fist saying, get off my porch.
Are you the baseball police today?
I don't want to be the baseball
police. You've kind of been the baseball police.
You're
today.
Usually the baseball police.
I'm actually not the baseball police.
You're the fun police, right?
I'm Black Cop.
I'm Black Cop. Do you have a black cave?
Always. I mean, now I have the black mobile.
The black cave, the stone rolls, the black cave is open, and there comes the black
mobile. I picture Scatman Crothers' apartment in The Shining.
As the black cave? Dick Halloran over the Overlook Hotel.
Yeah, I mean, the Blackmobile is pretty awesome.
See, you like that's why you like being the black cop.
I've had a lot of fun driving.
Man, I want to be the black cop someday. I'm not allowed.
Nope, not allowed. I am, though. But yeah, you've been a little baseball policey today.
See, I don't want to be that guy. I'm trying to express it in a real way. Look,
all the jewelry and all the stuff.
That's not what I'm saying, okay? Don't turn me into Bud Norris over here. I don't want to be Brian McCann up in this ish.
Old Matt LaRussa over here sitting next to me.
Stop yourself. You probably know the rules better than I.
Now I know.
A, but you C,
but you didn't
F,
know.
H.
You didn't know the rules.
That was my favorite when Tony got caught.
Well, I mean, that's whatever. But the baseball, him falling asleep during a game,
yeah, that's not
great.
That's not good.
Especially when you're the baseball police.
I haven't fallen asleep during a game since at least Sunday night.
Can I just tell you?
What?
I mean, I know that we often will talk about and rank naps.
Yeah, baseball nap.
Baseball naps are great.
It's
golf naps are better. I think
I don't think you know why the golf nap is not better? Because when you wake up, golf is on. It's not baseball. Serious. You wake up and you're like, oh my God, there's still a baseball game on. This is amazing.
West Coast college football on a Friday night.
Oh, that's a good nap. That's a good nap.
You're not even trying. And you're like, oh, you know what? I do want to see San Jose State versus BYU. I'm in.
RIP Pac-12 after dark.
Pac-12 after dark was the shiznit, let me tell you. I can get away with that, right?
Oh, yeah. Absolutely.
And that was beautiful, where you look up like, wait.
It was great.
Utah State is playing UCLA?
So could Dan Plesak have gotten away with God Daznit? I think so.
Maybe.
Yeah. Snoot would have been good.
Yeah. I think, Tanny, did I just get away with that?
Maybe.
Sweet. I think, man, we're inventing new ways to express ourselves.
I mean, we're going to have to after that interview with Plesak yesterday. The people on the Twitch and on the Odyssey app got themselves a treat. Exactly.
Yeah, they did.
Because Layla hit us up, and when she was walking out of here, she was like,
she had no idea.
She was like, I heard that the Plesak interview. I was like, oh, did you hear the time where he said, and then when he also said, she was like, no. I was like, oh, yeah. Mm-hmm. That happened.
Yeah.
God.
That's amazing. That's Plesak talking about seeing Shohei Ohtani or Aaron Judge walk out of the dugout. Be like, oh boy, that is a thing. So look, I enjoy the hell out of PCA. I hope that it's something he can eventually get under control, because I think there's going to be a lot of people that run with it a lot farther than I'm running with it, you know, because I see all the greatness in him and I see the humanity in him, and I'm not going to harp on it. I've brought it up. I've now talked about it, but there's going to be a lot of people that go to the next level. There's some of the fans that Alex was with or my sister or others are going to be like, oh man, screw that guy. There will be people that turn on you if you do that kind of thing again.
I think that the turn only happens if he stops being a productive baseball player.
It's baseball, so he's going to.
Of course, because it's baseball.
He's going to do that. He's going to do that in the middle of a slump, which happens, and people are going to be upset about it.
But I need him to be himself and go through this. I think there are so many athletes who mute themselves, and I don't want him to do that. Like I want to give him the space to explore some of that. I also think that professional athletes and men in general, I think that we do a terrible job of suppressing emotion, and sometimes we do it because of appearances. And if it's not destructive, like I don't find that to be destructive, although the who's picking up your stuff is a thing for me.
That, and that part of it can eat away at a clubhouse. I have seen it.
I agree. But as long as it seems to be kind of self-contained, I'm okay with him growing into the man that he's going to be.
Sure. Yeah, no, that's totally
fair. And that's
fair.
Part of the journey.
That absolutely is. And I think he's got good elder statesman teammates and some smart coaches to help guide him on that journey.
And I mean, he's also got a guy that we consider to be an elder statesman teammate that also does crazy goofy stuff that sometimes get caught on camera.
Oh, JT?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, remember when we all recognized what was going on? And we were like, wait, was that? Oh, no.
You know what I wish? I wish when JT was the fan of the game. Because that's amazing. That's what it was. He was the fan of the game.
He was.
With those things hanging around. I wish
so to speak.
That the next night, the broadcast would have begun.
Let's take a look back at our fan of the game. From
just simply play-by-play, turning to color and saying, boy, let's talk about last night. That game was nuts. You know, that's what it should have been.
Yar.
But again, you know, Alex Cooper, horrendous, you know.
Tanny, I feel like
and
you're turning on me.
Scene.
Tanny's turning on me this whole day. This whole day. Like, he's got me as the baseball police now.
Well, Tanny didn't call you that. All of the listeners did.
Not all of them. Not all of them. Some people are not calling me that.
Most of them.
This texture's on with a good one. You guys need a segment called Express Yourself where you come up with ways to vent without cursing.
Ooh, like creative word combinations and choices?
Hey, man, I'll say it right now. Dagnabbit is almost as satisfying as a curse word.
Mother, father?
Oh, boy, that's good because that's scary, too.
Yeah, you mother, father.
Yeah, that's good. Yeah, that's good.
That's good.
I'm going to go with dagnabbit. Because I'm the baseball police. Because that's what Tony La Russa
would
say.
That definitely seems like something the baseball police would say over and over again.
Fudge.
Dang, damn it.
Baseball narc, because you're kind of undercover right now.
Right. right. You're right, Tanny.
He's, hello, fellow kids.
Yeah, his whole thing is, oh, I really love baseball, and baseball is great. Fellow baseball fans, get off my lawn with your expression. How dare you get angry? God.
You love when I'm the bad cop. It's just because I can't be the black cop.
That's not why you're the bad cop.
It is. Well, what am I supposed to do?
You could be the good cop.
I do
it's
that.
It's good cop, black cop.
Is that
you
the show?
You could just be the good cop.
I get so confused. I well, really
it's a
do.
Bunch of different shows, actually.
Can I drive the Blackmobile? Can I drive it
you,
one time?
You can get a ride.
Oh, all right.
I'll bring it down here. You might have a problem getting out.
Really? It's one of those? You sink down deep into the Blackmobile?
Speaks. I have been talking, you know, I've been talking about this for a little bit, right?
Yes, yes. About yeah, getting it?
Your Cybertruck.
Yes. And so I went and got it. And
the spinoff party's got to be just for him.
Thanks to Audi Exchange St. Charles. They were great. I went and took it to my parents' house. And my mom was like, ooh, I like this car. This car.
I like this kind of party.
This car is pretty. And I said, would you like to get into the car? And she's like, yes, because it's got nice leather
That's
suede
awesome.
Seats.
That's, what a beautiful thing when you can do that for one of your parents like that.
So then she was like, your father can't get into this car. Like, I can barely get out of this car. It's pretty low to the ground.
It space. Is, huh?
And I have
I can
already
stop, drop, and roll if it's worth it.
Look, this is me and my brother went on a ride. And my brother's 5 years older than me. Yeah. And he's like, how long are you going to be able to drive this? Because the getting out part is very issue. Different.
Here's an option. If you thought about this, don't get out. Just don't do
Just
it.
Just keep driving.
Just keep driving. Sleep in there, you know? Get yourself an Ethernet hookup.
It's a good radio gimmick. It's the guy who does the show from a car.
Yeah.
Well, because he lives his whole life there.
Well, guess what, Tanny?
Build a toilet in.
I produced that segment here on The Score when Les drove back from the Eastern Conference Finals.
Of course he did.
In 1999.
And he did the show from the car?
He had to do the first segment from the car.
I think Sears told me that he did what from like a drive-through one time.
I'm not surprised.
Wait a minute. Les was covering like a post-Jordan era Eastern Conference Finals.
He went down.
He felt compelled to do that.
The Pacers-Knicks, right? So he went Pacers-Knicks, and he went down to Indianapolis. And by then, I'm what, a year into my tenure here at The Score?
They should have just let you host the segment until he got back.
Well, I'm getting to that part of it. So Les tells me, he says, I think I'm going to make it back before. And so I'm like, what? Because that was when the show started at 1. Remember, Tommy Williams was on.
Oh,
from,
yes.
So Zampilla was producing
I
that.
I love you, big partner.
Exactly. So I'm like, okay. And I'm doing the math. And, you know, we're not good at math.
But
I was sitting there going, it's a 3-hour drive from Indianapolis. And you've been working all day.
Uh-oh.
And so if you're coming back here, sure, you might be here by 12:55 or whatever because of the time change.
Yeah, we're not going to be ready to do a radio show.
You're not going to be ready to do a radio. I was like, all right, so I got everything planned for you. You're pretty much just going to have to walk in and be Les. He's like, I'm not going to make it.
This is Les Grobstein, the late Les Grobstein, an absolute treasure, our former overnight guy.
So he says, I'm going to have to start the show on the phone. And I'm like,
that's not a thing.
Terrible idea.
That is not a thing.
So he's like, can you load up that last break between Tommy going off the air and us starting? And I'm like, I can ask Tommy. And he's like, no. I'm on 90.94 now. I'm not far from the station. I'm like, okay. So, and Tommy was like, do you want me to stay? I was like, nah, man, just go because right, he's going to come in here like a house on fire.
There's the problem. Tommy's got to stay. That's radio.
No, he does not. No, he does not have to stay. So Les gets in. Let's call it 112, 117.
All right, you guys ready? Let's do it. 112, 117.
Somewhere in there, he gets there. And he's wired because he just drove 3 hours and there's the adrenaline rush of being on the air and all that stuff. Then
Patrick Ewing was traveling all night long.
You
like mad about the Knicks.
He definitely did that. And then at about 3:30, the crash happened.
Oh, no.
And for those of you on Twitch, I'm going to show you what happened, okay? And I'm going to try to explain it. Les is sitting there doing the segment, takes his glasses up.
Oh, the head just falls directly into the microphone.
Now,
Connor, don't gift that. Whatever you do, have a little class. A little don't class. Gift that.
So,
Connor, you have 60 seconds. Go.
Get it up there. So he falls asleep while talking to a caller.
Oh, man. So the caller ends and there's no host.
No, that was my first moment on the air.
Really? Your first moment ever on the score?
I jumped on the air.
Good job.
And asked the caller about what he said. And I was like, Les, what do you think about that? And he's like, well, what do you think about it? Lawrence, what do you think about it?
Oh, wow.
And then I gave my thoughts on it. And then he woke up. And he was like,
and that was that.
And he's back in. And
he got the shock that lasted him the rest of the show.
And then he told me, I can open my mic whenever I want.
That is the
origin story of me on the air at the score.
Folks, no. And it, from there to the Blackmobile.
Right.
So you owe everything to Les.
100%.
Now, someone who you know, I owe nothing to, I also have a similar story. This happened with, this is not as good of a story, but it did happen. Ranji, this happened before a Sox pregame one time. Where we were sending him out to God knows where, and all of a sudden it was like 2 minutes before the pregame opening billboard, which is like, has to be precise timed, and he calls, he's like, hey, buddy, I'm not going to make it. And he was lost on top of it. So it's like, and this was before GPS was readily available on cell phones. So it's like looking at MapQuest. Well, did you turn in 0.3 miles? Where are you? So he did the first segment of pregame on the phone.
Oh, wow.
Les was, I got to say, hey buddy, for a guy who was driving 90 miles an hour and holding a brick phone. It's 1999, y'all. And holding a brick phone.
It was a pretty good segment.
Did a pretty good job. For a guy hosting a show while driving like a crazy person.
Amazing.
He did a pretty good job of hosting the show.
I love when radio story time breaks out on this show.
Oh, it was a 4-minute open that I put together, Speaks, because I was ready. I was like, this guy's not going to make it. I'm going to give him as much time as I can. I put together a 4-minute open. So he would have as much. And you remember Belmont.
Yeah.
He came in like Kramer on Seinfeld.
Well, and you could park literally right next to the door.
You could roll right up. Yeah.
It's not like we're downtown. You could just roll right up and get there.
You roll right up.
And it's predictable. There's no traffic on that part of town.
Not that time of night.
No. So I understand the confidence that you're actually going to make it. And yet he did not.
And he didn't.
Incredible.
It was really awesome. And I owe Les a lot for allowing me to do all sorts of stuff as far as production and cleaning up the stupid production that he used to have where he would. We talked about Speaks. Les would, you know how we had the update studio and we could do production back there? And the reel-to-reel back in the day before digital editing, where we go back there with a grease pin and a razor blade, cut tape and splice it together and stuff.
Don't call it stupid. You're on some of it.
Down, down, down.
I am.
Lakers going down.
I am. That's not what I meant by stupid. What I meant by stupid is that
I know,
Les,
I just wanted to play it.
Well, you should play it all the time. I love Les. He would stop the reel-to-reels with his hands.
Oh.
At places that he wanted it to stop. And so when you do that, you get a whoop sound that would then end up on the carts that we would play. And I was like, we need to stop that. And he's like, what do you mean? I was like, that doesn't sound good. I was like, I'll just do your production from now on.
Yeah, I could just make an edit to a blank part of the tape.
Yeah, just tell me what you want and I'll put it together. I'm your producer. And I think it was like the first time that Les had actually had someone
who was doing the work for him.
Who wanted to produce the show.
Yeah. That's a big moment when you realize that.
He's someday, like, oh, okay.
Someday when Alex Kuhn actually starts producing this show. We're going to have that sensation.
Wow.
Johnny, you knew it was coming.
I couldn't wait more.
You knew what,
are you going to do the show tomorrow from the road?
From the road, yeah.
That's when I become a producer?
Yeah, that's when you step in.
Finally.
Hey there, I'm Kendra Adachi, and my show, The Lazy Genius Podcast, helps you be a genius about the things that matter and lazy about the things that don't, and you get to decide what matters. I'm not here to tell you what to do. I'm here to give you a new way to see. Episodes of the Lazy Genius Podcast are full of compassionate time management tips and permission slips to do what makes sense for you. New episodes drop every Monday. Follow and listen to the Lazy Genius Podcast on the free Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.
Layla Rahimi, Marshall Harris. Rahimi and Harris, middays 10 a.m. to 2 on 670 The Score.
And strike three. Six Ks for Lugo in five scoreless innings.
Woo!
And Lugo gets him. Letter high cutter. And he got him with a fastball. High heat from Lugo, and he's got his second strikeout.
Watch how he sets up hitters. Okay, right here. There's a breaking ball. It sets up Christian Walker, and he struck him out the next pitch. Here's a slider, and then he comes in with a heater. Next guy, DeCenzo, you're down. And the third guy here, Caratini, there it was. Two different pitches. He's great. He's a master at setting guys up.
Swung on and missed. Strike three. Eight Ks for Lugo. Seven scoreless.
Yeah, who's watching you is us. This is Rahimi and Harris on 670 The Score as we continue our stalking segment because we want to talk about people you might be honing in on ahead of the trade deadline. We talked about Mitch Keller yesterday. Today, we set our sights on Seth Lugo. Why is it fun to bring up both of their names? Well, they faced off last night.
It's great, actually, that we just talked about someone yesterday and then he immediately hits the mound. And he doesn't lose, doesn't win, no decisions for everyone in a win for Seth Lugo's team, in which he also gets the no decision. And I think the biggest thing takeaway-wise from last night specifically is that Seth Lugo looks pretty doggone good of late.
He does. The Royals beat the Pirates last night 4-3. They are now second in the AL Central as we, number one, try to figure out if he's even available. There's that part of it. The Royals right now 14 games back of the Tigers, but that's because of how good the Tigers are at 59-34. But they're only four games back of a wild card. They and the Minnesota Twins.
One of three teams, four games back in that wild card race. The AL is wide open in terms of the playoffs. A lot of that has to do with slides by the Yankees and other teams. And the division in the AL West might be a two-team race. The division in the AL Central, that race is over. Seemingly, because Detroit's not slowing down for anyone. But the AL East is wide open, and some of the other teams that are just hanging within earshot of 500 are within earshot also of a playoff spot.
Well, and that's why it's important to acknowledge whether or not Seth Lugo may be available. Now, let's talk about his contract, number one. He turns 36 in November. So his age is a part of this, and I think will affect, if he is traded, the price. He's got a $15 million player option for next season, but it sounds like he might be opting out of it given that he finished second in the Cy Young voting. He was an all-star. He has a body of work that is impressive, and there are many teams who want him. Like, the Mets are also in the fray on this when it comes to teams who are interested in his services.
I think the Mets, Dodgers, Yankees are all teams just like the Cubs that need pitching. And when we talk about Lugo, here's why he's right now number one on my list of guys that the Cubs should just go after and get. Number one, he is an out-getter. Last year, he led the league in batter's face, 836. He pitched over 200 innings in a time in which people don't do that. He pitched 206 innings. You mentioned the fact that he was second to you-know-who, Tarek Skubal, in the Cy Young voting, but also a Gold Glove winner. He fits right up the middle with what you're talking about, the spine of the defense. He can help himself with what he's able to do on the mound. And I think the other thing that I don't want to get lost in the shuffle, he did pitch in the postseason last year, making two starts. He gave up one run in 4 1/3 and a win against the Orioles and two runs in five innings against the Yankees. I like the fact that he is a guy who has shown that he can not only be a big moment pitcher, but he can come up when the regular season's over.
But here's the rub. As we mentioned, the Royals are on one right now. They've now won after last night's win, I believe it is, 8 out of their last 12. So when you consider that, he might not be available, but let's admire the body of work. He also throws a ton of pitches.
10 of them.
Yeah, you've got a sinker, a curveball, a four-seam fastball, a cutter, a slurve, a changeup, a slider, and a, just to mix it up, slow curve. The guy knows how to pitch. That's the bottom line here. He will add value to a team even at 35 years old, even if he decides to opt out in that age 36 season. I could see why he is an attractive trade candidate. And you think that he is even higher than that for you.
Here's why. So a 1.54 ERA over his last seven starts. So it's like, if you want to go, what have you done for me lately? That's cool. But understanding how good the Cubs offense has been and what we expect out of them on a night-to-night basis, if you told me I'm going to add a pitcher to the rotation that in 12 of his 17 starts gave up two earned runs or less, and that he went five-plus innings in all but one start this season, I think you'd sign up for that.
Let's also listen to what others have to say about Seth Lugo, because that's what stalking is all about. It's not just about what we say. What do the others say? So let's start with Ozzie Guillen talking about Seth Lugo when he faced the White Sox on June 6th.
It's outstanding, you know, because Lugo's on the mound. Lugo has been playing Nintendo against the White Sox hitting. All of a sudden today, the White Sox take advantage. It was deep in the counts a lot of pitching count. That's the reason they take it out in the fifth inning. And good job by the hitters today.
My only question, Ozzie, is, was he playing Little League Baseball? Was he playing Bases Loaded 2? Was he playing Baseball Stars? Which NES game was he playing against the White Sox when he was dominating?
Ozzie, Lugo's been playing Nintendo.
I feel like Ozzie would tee that up perfectly in a response.
Maybe Tecmo Baseball? I can go on and on with this one. The original MLB Baseball on Nintendo? Look, Nintendo got a lot of baseball games.
That they do, and I feel like... They have as many as pitches that Lugo throws. Let's also hear from his manager, Matt Quattaro, on what Seth Lugo does so well.
We couldn't be happier, you know, for sure, not only on what he's done on the field, but what he's done behind the scenes, the way he leads in the clubhouse, the way he communicates with the pitching staff, but also the coaching staff, just the person he's been. It's been a pleasure to have him and his family here with us, for sure. But then you take to what he's done on the field, and it'd be really hard to find flaw in anything he's done.
You heard the mention of family there. Do you know what his nickname is? Seth Lugo's nickname is Puerto Rican. Do you know why his nickname is Puerto Rican? It's a nod to his paternal grandfather. And he also played for the Puerto Rican team back in the 2017 World Baseball Classic. So he's from Louisiana, and he wasn't sure when he got to Team Puerto Rico whether or not he'd be accepted, because like, he's a Louisiana boy. But they welcomed him with open arms, and as a nod to that, he's been called Puerto Rican ever since. And he's, as they said, a 10-year veteran. You mentioned he's turning 36 soon. He knows what this is, and he knows what this ain't.
Well, he also is pitching. I mean, to finish second in Cy Young voting at 34, that is an incredible feat to have in Major League Baseball. So, number one, if you're the Royals, I see why you would want to keep him, because he helps you get the best chance to still contend for that wild card. But if, given his age, given what you know the options look like, you know, if you want to move somebody, Russ talked about the possibility of buying and selling at the same time. That might be savvy for them. Let's listen to his general manager on the Royals late last season about what he saw out of him.
He's been outstanding. I mean, it's been fun to watch him, because, you know, we know what we thought he would be from afar, but now you're in the clubhouse with him, you're watching the work that he does. It feels like he's even getting better with maybe more experience as a starter. With all the different pitches he throws, the strikes that he throws, you almost feel like he's starting to figure out how to strike guys out as well, at least over the last two games. So he's been, I mean, we couldn't ask him to do anything more than what he's done. So it's been really fun to watch, and it's exciting. You look forward to watching him pitch.
In Seth Lugo's last seven starts, the righty has gone 41 innings with a .132 ERA, 132. The whip, sub one at 0.95, 43 strikeouts compared to 14 walks. There's a lot to love.
So slight concerns would be the fact that his strikeout to walk ratio is 2.84, which is the lowest that it's been in quite some time. You got to go all the way back to his rookie season. His strikeouts per nine, just 7.8. Look, his fastball average is 91.6. That's why the pitch mix is so important.
Right.
And he throws 10 pitches. Now, he doesn't throw them all equally, but he does just enough of each one to make you think twice about things. Like the four-seamer that he throws, 20.9% of the time. Curveball, 17.6. Sinker, 15. Cutter, 12.6. Changeup, 10.6. That's just the first five pitches. He all throws at more than 10% of the time. You don't know what's coming. Then there's the slurve you talked about 9% of the time he's throwing the slurve, which is the slow curve. Like, there's a lot of mix there.
There is. I mean, the guy just knows how to pitch. Like, that's it. And you're seeing it in his results, and you're seeing how he's doing it. I think heading up to a point where if you know that that's a possibility for you as an individual, it's a very hard time to keep your inside your game, to play inside of yourself, and to be able to do this. And he's showing you how he's answering under pressure as well, which I think is really cool.
We don't know, as we're talking about Seth Lugo in our stalking segment leading up to the trade deadline, guys that the Cubs might be interested in. We don't know if he will be available, but I wonder if he is available, Layla. Man, that cost is going to be high. Even though he's not an elite arm, he is a top-of-the-market arm because we know what the market looks like.
Yeah, last year still matters to me.
Okay.
You know, and what he did. And the fact that I just mentioned his numbers over his last seven, I feel like that is valid in all of this as well. His team ends up, as we said, out-dueling Pittsburgh. But even in his most recent outing, 6 innings, 2 earned runs, 1 walk, 5 strikeouts, that'll work. 2 home runs given up, you don't love that, but God knows we understand. So, ideally, I mean, and you look at him as a real possibility in the trade candidate market for sure.
That dog will hunt, I believe, is the...
I always say that about a hit ball. I'm like, that dog will hunt.
Listen, where the Cubs are right now, they just need guys who can get outs and do it without giving up a bunch of runs. But, and he fits that bill.
He also fits the bill of being able to take up a lot of innings. And that's important, too, when we consider this all together. You're listening to Rahimi and Harris on 670 The Score as we continue to talk about stalking possible trade candidates. Yes, Robbie?
So you guys talked about with Russ last segment. If you haven't listened to that, go back in the Rewind feature on the Odyssey app. We all know that. Where would Seth Lugo be in the Cubs' rotation? You guys said he may be ahead of Shota Imanaga. Where was he fit?
I think he's still 2 to Shota. Age. Sorry. It matters in athletics. That's all. Sometimes my theories are that simple. Like, Daniel Palencia throws 100, give him the 9th. Like, oh, he throws strikes and he throws 100? Yep, 9th inning for you. Oh, you're older than usual pitchers we like? Okay, you're number 2.
I don't think that I'm doing it for the same reason, but I would have him slotted in at the 2 because of his experience with the playoffs, but also deference to Shota as being the guy who's been the guy for them for 2 seasons now. You see the winning percentage when he's on the mound. You see that the Cubs usually do, last night was an aberration, they usually do produce when Shota is on the mound. I like him slot in at it too, and feeling like you got a puncher's chance when you're talking about Matthew Boyd now as your 3. And that's the whole reason why I say bring someone closer to the top of a rotation, because it doesn't matter if you add at the bottom if that guy's your 5th starter. He's a non-factor in the playoffs.
This is a good point from Twitch. This is hologram_Harry. Is this really the year when GMs give up 6 years of control of a top prospect for a number 3? Yes, I think it is. I think you're going to, once the first domino starts to fall, I think some teams are going to be really aggressive. Because remember, as conservative as we think a lot of teams have been with an impending potential work stoppage after next season, I think they might also think that this is the best time to utilize the windows of some available talent.
Well, I don't think they give up Owen Casey in this deal.
No, I don't think the Cubs would. I'm saying this at GMs. I'm not particularly talking about Owen Casey.
Okay. I think the big thing for me is Ben Brown is probably going to get moved in a deal.
That's a realization I'm
kind of coming back to, unless there's someone lower level where you're going to give up maybe more prospects to get a guy that can help you with innings.
I wonder if Spiegel and Holmes would ask this of Craig Counsell, because he is joining 670 The Score in just under an hour at 2:30. We have more to come here on 670 The Score. We have the classiest sports interruption of all time.
I like classy.
Don't we? We continue to stalk people, by the way. Send us your submissions. We've gotten some really funny, like, out-of-context requests. Like, please stalk Shane Bieber. Please stalk so-and-so. And I'm like, hey, you got it. We'll do what we can. And just as a friendly reminder, if you need to get some of these wild trade ideas off of your chest, if you're bursting with a sports thought, go to the Odyssey app, hit the leave a voice message feature. Tell our meatball machine we're going to put together a compilation. So that way, nobody looks that wild.
That's coming up Friday. Actually, yeah. It might just get up
there's
a whole
power,
bunch of wild
there's
takes.
There's power numbers. You know, meatball don't be machine. Afraid. Don't be afraid to throw something out there. I have a feeling you're going to be among friends.
Listen to the Spiegel at Home show on the Odyssey and iHeartRadio apps.
I would imagine that that play gets to live in a space where maybe it's the most exciting play one can have in baseball. An inside the park home run to win the game. A three-run inside the park home run to win a game. That was crazy out in San Francisco. The other part that was crazy is that there was another inside the park home run last night. Lawrence Butler of the A's also hit one. So you had a night where there were two inside the park home runs, one of which was a walk-off. This is Spiegel and Holmes show. Spiegs, he had to beat it. He had to go. He was not feeling well, and so he's going to go and get a couple extra hours of rest where he doesn't have to worry about this show that we do here. But I'm going to hang out with you for another 90 minutes. We're going to talk with Neil Kotz coming up at 5 o'clock.
I told Speaks don't hang out with Adrian Hauser before the show. That's probably what happened.
See, you know? Right. Yeah, Adrian Hauser was throwing up, and Speaks was probably asking him questions, and now he's got the thing. Now, if Speaks goes out tonight and throws 7 innings of one earned run ball, then we'll know. Yeah,
he gave us a quality start here today.
He did. He got us a quality start, and now it's our job to – we got to bullpen this thing together and get out of here.
Yeah, it wasn't hot garbage, that's for sure.
It was not hot garbage. Dustino, I would love to know. And you know what? Now that you guys can be my partner on this, you guys can be my co-host. I'll open the phone lines. As far as exciting plays go, which one is your favorite? What baseball anomaly do you like? 312-644-6767. I found last night to be absolutely gripping with the idea of inside the park home runs. In my baseball career, I hit 2 total home runs. They both happened in the same game, and one of them was an inside-the-park home run. So I do know how that feels, and it feels amazing, especially when you're someone that's not considered to particularly run well, and being a catcher, you don't particularly run well, and you end up with an inside-the-park home run that wins the game is pretty fascinating. And there were some other people that we had this wonderful conversation with Nico Horner yesterday about anomalies and rarities inside of baseball. And here's what he had to say about it.
I hope you get that cycle someday, man. I looked it up because I remembered it was close. The cycle has happened 349 times in Major League Baseball.
Yeah, that's the year, right? Because perfect game is what, in the 20s?
Yeah, perfect game's in the 20s. No hit.
So it's like 10, 15 times as likely as a perfect game.
No hitters are 326. It's almost exactly the same rarity as no hitter, a cycle.
Huh. I would have said a no hitter was harder to do, but that's interesting.
I feel like natural cycle is way harder.
Oh, way harder. Yeah, to get 4 at bats in a row?
There's only been 14 of those.
Oh my god. That's
a good baseball stat. Wait, so has there been more cycles or no hitters exactly?
326 no-hitters and 349 cycles. So more cycles than no-hitters, just barely.
I'm gonna ask some clubhouse questions today, trivia-wise, see what people say.
I like it. We appreciate that Nico would do that, and he is. Like, people have been saying inside the chat that Nico is a geek, a baseball geek. Yeah, he's someone that loves the game that he plays. And that's not always the case with professional athletes. Some guys know that they're good, and that's why they play the game. They know they can make a lot of money, and they love playing, but they don't necessarily love the game. Like, I would talk with Charles Tillman about this all the time. He rarely watched, while he was playing, he rarely watched football that wasn't film. Like, guys are watching film like crazy, but they don't necessarily sit around. Like, let's say the Bears play on Thursday. Charles wasn't watching the full slate of games on Sunday. And there's a bunch of guys like that. I know that there are tons of hoop heads that do like just watching ball no matter what. But there are some that like, I play this and that's my job. I don't necessarily need anything else. And when you start looking around, some people have offered up and people have texted in if you would like to offer your thoughts, 312-644-6767. The triple play in the inside the park home run. Yeah, we'll get to the triple play part in just a minute because someone else brought that up. To go back to the no-hitter or the perfect game, what I think is interesting about that is the level of shared anticipation that comes with it. If someone is lining up a game that's so good that we all have to kind of sit and wait and we're like, all right, how is this going to end? And then you have to start having feelings about whether or not you want to see it end and how you want to see it end. If it's a blowout game, then I'm always rooting for the no-hitter or the perfect game. If it's a close game and a runner on could change the complexion of the game, I'm a little bit caught in between. I'm like, I don't know. Like, I kind of want to see how this affects the rest of this if someone does poke through. Like, you don't want to see anyone, you don't want to see the Galarraga thing happen where a guy loses it on a terrible call by the umpire. But the anticipation that grows with the idea of a no-hitter or perfect game, I think is outstanding. 708 Texter says, cycle. It's way harder than a no-hitter. I don't know if I would say that it's way harder, but seeing someone hit for the cycle is cool, and there are so many factors that have to go into it. But anytime we've seen a no-hitter or a perfect game, think about all of the things that have to happen inside of that. Pretty much anytime you see a no-hitter or a perfect game, there's one crazy play. There's someone who makes a defensive gem for you inside of that game. There's always that one catch or that one dig at first base that someone makes for a pitcher that's trying to get it done. So I don't know if I would say it was harder, but I see where you're coming from. Speaking of triple plays, we took this to Craig Counsell because we wanted to know, because he's a guy that loves baseball as well. Here's what he said about the anomalies that are in baseball. Craig, we were having a conversation with Nico yesterday about him lining up the cycle and that there was an opportunity for a natural cycle. And then we got into a fun little baseball thing about cycles versus perfect games and no hitters and things like that. Then last night we have an inside the park home run walk-off and another inside the park home run that happened in a game. For you, a baseball lifer, what's your favorite kind of weird baseball anomaly that you love to see happen?
The triple play, probably if we're on the pitching side, I would say is the big one. I think it's a great play. I the triple play would probably be the one that I would like.
All right. Do you want your triple play 5-4-3, or do you want a line out with guys off base?
5-4-3. Yeah, 5-4-3. Because lots of guys, three guys involved, pitcher involved. Multiple runners on, like changes an inning. 5-4-3. Yeah.
I think if I had my choice, I would also go with a 5-4-3 triple play. Like that's how I want. I don't want someone getting caught off base. I just want like a great play around the horn with all that movement that's going on and guys trying to make plays. 312-644-6767 is the number. Out to Matt. Hey, Matt, you're on the score. Did we lose Matt? All right. That's fine. I get it. Oh, there he is. Hey, Matt, you're on the score.
Yeah, I was going to suggest the David Bodie Grand Slam with two outs of the ninth, trailing by three.
I mean, I get that everyone wants to do something specific, Because I could see that in the text chain, too.
No, I think what he was talking about, like, he just kind of didn't word it the way I think maybe we would have liked. But what do they call that when you're down three and then you hit the grand slam to win by one? It's like the ultimate grand slam. There's a baseball term for that.
The ultimate walk-off?
Yeah, maybe that's what he's talking about, yeah.
Yeah, but like, if you look like, in the text message, like, well, the Burley perfect game. Like, no, we get that you have seen a lot of these things. We're talking.
The Burley perfect game is my favorite anomaly because it's only happened once.
Right. Absolutely. It's very rare.
And it can never happen again.
It can never well, you never know. I mean, yeah. July 11th.
I mean, if they trade someone this weekend and he's in the park, roll him out there.
If they trade Hauser and they need someone to start and Burley happens to be in the house, I like that idea. It's crazy. 630 says the unassisted triple play. Okay, sure. Well, I'll allow that. That at least is a little bit more general. 773 text, I like this. Milestone game, like 3,000 hits or last week Kershaw with 3,000 strikeouts. That was pretty cool. Let's go to David. Hey, David, you're on the score.
Hey, Lawrence. For me, the anomaly is 20-plus strikeouts by a pitcher.
Gee, I wonder which one you're talking about. I wonder what game you might be talking about when you say that as your favorite anomaly that happens enough that you could actually speak to watching more than one of them.
Hey there, I'm Kendra Adachi, and my show, The Lazy Genius Podcast, helps you be a genius about the things that matter and lazy about the things that don't, and you get to decide what matters. I'm not here to tell you what to do. I'm here to give you a new way to see. Episodes of The Lazy Genius Podcast are full of compassionate time management tips and permission slips to do what makes sense for you. New episodes drop every Monday. Follow and listen to The Lazy Genius Podcast on the free Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.